God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody at all, you can raise your hand or just unmute yourself and say hello.
Hey, I'm Kyle. 3 weeks.
Right on. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks.
Where are you from?
Virginia Beach.
Okay, I've heard of it. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Ben, would you like to say hello? All righty. Anybody else in their first 30 days? All right. I think, let's see, what's the situation with the chat? Everyone can chat publicly at present. So maybe some men will throw their numbers out there. I'll do that in a minute myself. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting for our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So you guys are in for a treat tonight. You're here on a special night. The format of this meeting normally is an open big book step study. We have we'll have two panelists basically share on the step. Like if you come back next week, we'll have two people talking about step one, and we take about 13 weeks to go through the 12 steps. And then on the 14th week, we have a special event called Supper and a Speaker. And usually when we do this in person, it's a big potluck and hundreds, maybe thousands of people show up for that. And we have a special speaker come in, and it's great fun and wonderful. But I hope you brought your own supper, and please come back next week. So I'm very excited tonight to have Jack D from Baltimore, Maryland, come and tell his story. I've been looking forward to it all week, and I don't want to take up another minute of his time. I give you Jack D.
I give you the same. My name is Jack Devon. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really cool to be here with you guys. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the ability to hopefully somewhat adequately share what the power that I found here has done for me, to me, and through me. That's the deal. This is not a story about a whole bunch of stuff that I did. I just feel really fortunate to have anything to say sometimes, because there was a long time where I really didn't. I wanted to have things to say, you know, I wanted to, I said things, but there was nothing in my heart. There was no experience, that really felt as though something had really happened to me, especially not in the way that I had heard other people talk about it happening to them. I've been sober since August 19th of 2012. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and really wanted to get sober for the first time in 2010. And I attended my first meeting in 2006. The only reason I say that is because it shows that alcoholism is way more powerful than me. I wanted to stop drinking and live a different life for a long time, but I really wasn't able to pull that off. I wanted to feel differently. I wanted to live differently. I wanted to think differently. wanted to be different. And I was never able to make it happen. I'm a guy that knew for a long time before it ever actually happened that I needed to be here. And so again, I just want to say thanks. I'm really grateful to be here. David, are we all good on audio and everything? Can you hear me okay?
You sound good. You're a little bit laggy.
Okay. All right. Just let me know if I need to do anything. My home group is called The Firing Line. We meet in Baltimore, Maryland, Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. We also meet on Zoom Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock. Happy to share that information with anybody. As some of you guys are here, I'm a proud card-carrying member of my home group. I'm thrilled to be a part of the group that I'm a part of. It's a meeting that's based in carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel really fortunate to be a part of it. This is a group that really kind of was born during the shutdown. I'm not going to say that I'm grateful for something like a pandemic. I don't want to say that because a lot of people have had a lot of suffering. But the home group that I'm now a part of, many of the people that I'm now connected to in my life on a daily basis, were brought into my wife and I's world as a result of this meeting. That kind of came from a place of, it was very backwards and very organic. But I don't want to be here for an hour and not mention it. You know, it's important to say that I really love the home group I'm a part of, and I haven't always felt that way. You know, I've been in different meetings. I haven't always, but I really do actually feel at home in my home, which is a special thing. And I am currently having an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous with a power that I only really ever heard people talk about for years. I was never able to be honest for a long time here. I didn't have the ability. I didn't have the power, the willingness. I don't know what to get honest with someone and really talk about what wasn't happening, what I wasn't feeling, how I wasn't doing. You know, I could only ever present my whole life. I could only really ever present what I thought people needed to hear, or what I believed needed to be said, or where I thought I needed to be so that I could think, feel, act, and be a certain way. My whole life was a sham. And for me, that didn't change when I got to AA. For some people, it does. For me, it did not. Fake it till you make it, some of the most dangerous advice you can give to a guy like me. Because this is literally my recipe for living, you know, until 6 years sober this time. I faked my whole, all I ever wanted to do was not have to do stuff, but have you believe that I'm the guy that's doing stuff. That's literally all I've ever really, that's really what I was shooting for until I realized that at death, I was going to die if I didn't actually do a lot of this stuff, especially here, you know? But I didn't come to AA talking about surrendering at death. I didn't come here because, you know, I thought my life was a bunch of series of mirrors that were like, I came here because when I put alcohol in me, I went way far past what we were shooting for pretty much every time. And when I stopped, I could never stay that way. It just wasn't happening. I, hospitals, outpatient treatment centers, inpatient treatment centers, different maintenance programs, you know, most of which were not actually prescribed by a doc, unless I am said doctor. You know, but I tried all kinds of different stuff to make all kinds of different things happen, and I failed. All I'm trying to say. And I'm in regards to sobriety, physical abstinence. What I've learned and continuing to learn is that I'm also apparently doing that in pretty much every other area of my life too, while not drinking also, which is an interesting experience when you get here and really think that by the removal of alcohol, you're really going to be doing okay. And all of a sudden, you start failing miserably in relationships. You may end up with a dishonest work life. You may end up as a man that you really don't want to be, even though you're sober. This is my story. So I don't want to neglect to tell, you know, the reality of while I was drinking or while I was, it's very important. And our book, in the doctor's opinion, says it very clearly. We believe that description of the alcoholic that leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. So I believe that an Alcoholics Anonymous talk from an alcoholic by an alcoholic about alcoholism that leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. I also think it's a little easy to make it a little too complete on that tip sometimes as well. So I want to make it clear, but I can't focus there because the reality is that that's really not where alcoholism centers for me. It's really not the mainstay or the basis or the bulk of my experience. Is not with the drink technically. Of course it was. I would have never come to AA. I would have never come here if I didn't have to, ever. I was not looking for new friends. I was not looking for to hang out with people drinking coffee. I was not looking to join a bowling league. I wasn't looking for friends in Bel Air, Maryland, dude. I was not looking to come to AA and hang out with the cool kids on Saturdays. You know what I mean? Like, not what I was shooting for. So I got here at the hands of not being able to stop doing something that I really had known I needed to stop doing for a long time. And when I did stop, starting again, over and over and over. I'm the guy that, like, the first time I drank, you know, the first time I really felt the effects produced by alcohol, I drank way more than was necessary. No, now I had drank like a little bit before that, but I mean like three or four friends, parents' house, played Hey Mister, got a fifth of Cuervo and a fifth of Jack, two gentlemen that would eventually become some of my closest companions, and got back to my parents' house and started passing these bottles around and drinking, you know, liquor after eating brownies after that weren't fully cooked after smoking pot at like 13. Right, this is the night that I'm talking about, but. We're all in the living room, and all of a sudden, one by one, there's no one left in the living room but me, right? So I'm now, I'm trying to find where these people are in my house. I don't know where, I don't know what's going on. I just know that, like, we're drinking liquor, and we're, my parents are, like, asleep upstairs. Like, where did you all go? What are you doing? Like, I'm alone somehow, you know? And the first guy I find is Matt. That's out back, the basement door, vomiting in a bush. And like turns around and just like, I'm so sorry, Jack. I'm so sorry. And it hit me immediately. I was just like, Matthew, you're outside. You know, I'm pretty sure there's four other kids inside. So whatever you're doing, continue to do it right there. It's actually the perfect place to be, man. I'm going to go find the people that are inside because God only knows what's going on. And as I turned around to walk back up the stairs, I don't know if any of you can remember this. I am sick enough to remember this like it literally happened yesterday. And it actually happened like 21 years ago. But I literally remember feeling like someone somehow like poured a bucket. Like I was like at the carnival and got hit and went into the dunk tank of liquor. And it went like through my whole body. And I grabbed the railing and my knees wobbled. And I could barely even walk. And I like, it went down and up. And I was like, and then all of a sudden it was like, I was like hiking up stairs and like trying to, this is like, and I will never forget that night. And people got vomited on that night. A whole bunch of stuff happened that night. But what really happened that night is like, it was electrifying. It was powerful and power filled. The experience that I had was magical. And the experience that I had was really finally, for real, going from sober to not at death. Like for real, I was far, far from sober. Drinking Jack and Cuervo at a, you know, I had never drank liquor. I mean, in a new power, a new sense of power, right? Felt like a new sense of power floated. That's the reality of this is what alcohol did in a mimicking sense. It really is. I didn't have that thought at 13 or 14. Don't get me wrong. I didn't have these words then. I just thought like, this is funny. And the whole story was that like, my buddy Jack vomited on my buddy John, and they both ended up laughing about it afterwards. And my parents never woke up. So it's just like, it was a story we told forever. Like that's, but I know looking back now that like, this was the first time I really actually felt the effect produced by alcohol. And until I went through the steps, fell in love with my wife, I had never had an experience that powerful ever, never. And until I never did again. I didn't. There were a few other things that I found along the way that I fell in love with quite deeply also. But that, I mean, taking a guy as uncomfortable as me, taking a guy as driven by fear as me, who thinks about himself as much and as often, as intensely as I do, and throwing liquor on that and freeing him from that, even if it's just for a moment, you have lit a fire in someone. And for me, it took a long time for it to go out. Now, less than many, I'm sure. But it took, it took a lot of car crashes. It took arrests. It took broken families. It took my own broken family, the families of others. It took friends dying. I mean, there is a line for the next 10 years of my life. I didn't really stop from on, it was like Pringles. Once you pop, you just can't stop, right? That's that tagline. For some reason, I always remember when I think about the allergy. I think about, because it's so true. It's like once I drank that first time, that was the reality for my life until finally I was separated and given a solution to the problem that presented itself while separated. Right. But I tried separation throughout the next 10 years too at different times. I went to an emotional growth boarding school. That's where I spent my junior and senior year of high school because I was doing so well in life. You know, that's how comfortable my family was with me. Dad, we're going to send you to the woods in New Hampshire to be in an emotional growth boarding school because this is how well we think you're doing emotionally and in life, period, where you need to go be in group therapy for like 17 hours a week, and all kind. I mean, it was, and it was the right place for me. It probably saved my life, honestly. And it was the only way I was getting a high school diploma. That's for sure. Put me in the middle of the woods and literally tell me, if you run from here, you're going to be lost. You're going to be in the middle of the woods. And you're going to be scared. And I was just like, you're right. You know what I mean? But like, I want to leave, but I just didn't because I'm scared. Thank God they did that. But one of the countless vain attempts, of my family, refinance their home to send me to that school. I was drunk 6 weeks after I left there and went on a 6-year run. I don't need emotional growth. And listen, I'm not here to debate with anybody. And sadly, I'm the speaker till the end of the meeting. So I guess there won't be any debating. But like emotionally growing is wonderful. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with growing emotion. That will happen. But I'm saying that I went somewhere where literally people went with the same problem apparently as me and did a ton of emotional work. I'm talking about pieces of paper the size of walls with your deepest, darkest secrets that you have to bring in a fifth step in closed workshop rooms with 15 other people signing their names next to the other weird stuff you did when you were a kid, things that happened. I'm talking about serious emotional work about trauma and families and all this type of stuff. 6 weeks to drink when I left there. 6 weeks. Feel a little bit like Roland. He was a little quicker, but like the same type of man, bang. It's not like someone asked me the wrong question. Hey, Jack, how you doing? Good, you got a drink, man? I got so thirsty there. It was insane. I thought about myself so much and talked about how I felt so much. All I wanted to do was drink half the time I was there. you know? And I'm the type of guy that it really started to occur to me there. Like, I entered that place, then at the end. And if I had really been growing emotionally, if I had really been getting, you know, better, I wouldn't have had less friends as I left. People could stand. It was hard to be around me. I become just so uncomfortable by not drinking. But I couldn't see this. So what happens is my life progresses. It gets worse. I can't stop drinking. I end up in 2010, finally at a place where I'm willing to say something like, things are really bad and I need help. Or what do I do? Or mom and dad, whatever. But just like, I can't, something's off. My uncle, who bizarrely enough, Thursday night on my 34th birthday, I got to speak for his 27-year anniversary. He comes up in 2010. He comes up from Silver Spring, Maryland, and sits on the porch of my parents' house with me and starts talking to me about what it looks like drinking and if I want to stop, what else am I doing, what he used to do, and that he used to do all this crazy stuff, whatever, you know, and that he's been sober at that point. I guess it was like 17 years. And he ends up being kind of the catalyst, the guy that was able to kind of step in and at a time when I was willing, get me somewhere that could physically separate me, but also somewhere where he knew that there was a shot that I might hear something about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because he knew, and one of my other uncles knew, and my family knew, Alcoholics Anonymous hadn't worked alcoholics before, that they knew personally and lived with, breathed with, worked with, and shared Thanksgivings with. I just had always said, I'm good on the whole God thing. Thank you, though. I'm not, you know, I have no desire. So I'm sorry, you know, as much as you guys sound like really nice people, and it's really cute that you have meetings and friends and fellowship, you know, I can't talk about God. My mom, for years, would just mention every once in a while, every like 6 months. You ever thought about going to a meeting, Jack? You know, I can't go there. They talk about God, Mom. That's all I would ever say. That's the only answer I ever had. And if that line in We Agnostics isn't so real about being beaten into a state of reasonableness. I was reading something this morning. And it said, the chances that you will wake up are in direct proportion to the amount of truth you can take without running away. How much are you ready to take? How much of everything you are you ready to have shattered without running away? How ready are you to think of something unfamiliar? Right? So this will be the theme now as I walk into AA in 2010. Then what happens is I stay, I get a sponsor, but I do what some well-meaning people told me to do, which was ask somebody who has what I want. I'm only going to get on this soapbox for 30 seconds, and it's more of a joke than anything, but it's the reality of my experience. To hand me that decision as I'm walking out of rehab with a duffel bag and a trash bag, I just want to maybe reconsider giving that job to somebody else besides, like, you're getting possibly the most important decision. Like, hey, go choose the guy who has what you want. He's going to help save your life. Do you think I'm picking a guy carrying a big book? Do you think I'm picking a guy that cares about God? Do you think I'm picking a guy that's living a principled, integrity-based life? I'm not. I'm picking the first guy that drives up the manhouse driveway in a Corvette, and that's what I did. Why wouldn't I? It's just a bizarre thing. Now, our text is clear. We approach the new man, period. There's no debating that. There's no, like, anyone can have whatever opinion they want. But if you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're adhering to what the textbook says, the first approach is made by the man with the answer. Period. This is the period. It's our job looking for you guys, right? Kyle or Dave, we're here for you. We are here to help you get better so that you can help other people get better. That's why we're here. Not to sit in front of a computer screen and talk about what's happened for just for an hour and go on my merry way and be a skipper dip doo. No, man. But here, you know, but there I am, literally. I got track marks on me. I got broken Jack Daniels bottles falling out of my trash bag. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, man, why don't you pick the right person for you? You know, I maybe it's a good idea. The guy I picked, great man, still love him. You know, it's just a funny thing for me to think about, like that I was trusted with so little, you know what I mean? But I was trusted with that. So anyway, what happens is this guy starts taking me through the steps. I can't be honest. I'm terrified. He starts asking me things like, hey, Jack, how you doing? How am I doing? I just saw you like 2 days. I mean, how am I doing? You know, like a question like that sends me spinning for 47 minutes. Now I'm 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months over. How am I doing? Let me think. I'm good. Then he leaves. And I go up to my halfway house bedroom and I sit on the edge of the bed and I just start thinking, how am I doing? Really? You know, like, I mean, if we think about the trash bag and the duffel bag, well, we're doing good. We got a job shop right now. So, like, I'm doing better than that. But I know my brain's a little crazy. I know I'm not comfortable. I know I don't feel well. I know I consistently think about drinking every single day. And I'm telling people it, but like, not really. But like, so how am I doing? I don't really know. And I will sit, this was a 1.5 minute interaction with this man. And I will sit up there for an hour and a half, replaying it and trying to fix it and mold it and move it. And I had no idea that that was alcoholism. And I had no idea that there was a way to not feel that way sober, because that's what sobriety always felt like to me. From the time I was 14 to the time I was 23, 24, it was no different now, because now I'm sitting in a room in a metal chair in Harford County, Maryland. That's going to change. I don't know why, but I thought it would, because I'm listening to cool young people speakers. Now I'm going to be okay. I don't know why, but I thought it would, because I'm next to other people that are doing stuff that I'm not doing. I don't know why, but I thought it would, because I'm sitting in 12-step rooms, not doing the 12 steps, expecting to get the benefits of the 12 steps. I don't know why. But I thought it would. I don't know why. Because I'm crazy. Because I'm insane. Because sober with no solution is about the worst place you put me. So I hang on for as long as I can. But somehow with 26 months, thank God for a job and a girlfriend, you know, all these places that I've had to make amends to. Because I literally just used, you're going to keep me sober. You're going to keep me sober. We're going to do it, man. We're going to be sober. It's going to be awesome. You know, just like, I'm dying inside. I'm just like, I just want to be... I'm just like so sober, I literally can't stand it. I'm just like, maybe there's a way to get drunk without drinking. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I can get drunk without having to like tell people that I drank and get a 24-hour check. You know, like, I'm just, it's over, man. I got nothing. I'm like, you know, you can only eat so much sushi when you're making like $8 an hour and have no money left. Like, there's just only so much that you can do, you know, until if you're anything like me, you're literally just like, so it's over. It just, it's done. And I really was trying to employ some techniques that I thought would work, that I think maybe at certain times did, but at certain times they don't. This is the part I missed. Page 24, there's a solution to save my life. The top of that page, a couple sentences, and then that first full paragraph in italics, that I am still so grateful that whatever transpired to have those words written the way that they were happened, because I couldn't read them the first time I was here. I went through a Joe and Charlie Big Book step study in that 2 years and came out the backside still thinking alcohol was my problem, and that by saying sorry and having my parents buy me lunch, I made amends. I was lost in the sauce, guys. I was gone. I had no idea what was going on, you know? But what did happen is finally, I knew there was only one thing I should do. And it was to drink. It was to not be sober. I knew there was only one thing. Like, I'm a young man in AA. There's only one thing you got to do. Don't drink. That's it. You know? And it's like, my experience shows that that is false information. There's a lot of stuff I have to do so that I don't drink. That's the reality of my condition. This is what I came up with. I was crying, driving north on 95, thinking about my mom, calling out of work, knowing that I was about to let down a grip of people. You know, gonna have to walk back into the man house. I graduated, got my plaque, got my homegroup, got my friends. I know all this stuff. I'm thinking about how bad it's gonna be. I know that I might die. That thought comes into my mind. I know that. You know, and I can't turn the car around. Untreated alcoholism just seeping out of me. No, there's so much of it. It's just, you know. And so I get not sober based on how uncomfortable my sober condition is. This is what happened. Sobriety drove me so insane that I had to get not sober, even though the only thing I knew I needed and wanted to do was to stay sober. And there was a short period where I thought that was the worst day of my life. I've come to see it as one of many wonderful blessings that has happened to me. Because what happened is I got sober, like I bounced in and out for not very long, a few days, 24-hour chip, a few days, 24-hour chip. I land back in. Someone sends me a speaker tape, and it's a couple of guys talking about alcoholism. And I'm not saying that I hadn't heard it the whole time I was living in this little town. I've been to too many meetings not to hear about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous steps. That's not real. But what did happen was, based on the pain of this relapse, which is not necessary for anyone, our book makes it very clear after saying you might want to try drinking again or something, that we can render a much greater service, which is to sit with you and help you see that the sober mind is the problem. We're gonna really talk about the mental states that this is a greater service than any sort of drinking experiment. Well, for me, what happened was that I drank again, and that pain, coupled with the message carried in some earphones in the back of a ShopRite produce department freezer, collided and somehow cracked my chest open and allowed me for the first time to see that of myself, I had no way to keep me sober. Period. No, the sentence ended. There finally was no comma, no but, no nothing. I was going to drink again, period, unless something miraculous happened. This is what, and you know, whatever it takes to start to have that experience is whatever. That's what happened to me. And thank God those guys were willing to be recorded whenever they were, and that someone had the willingness to send that recording along. And somehow it ended up, because this saved my life. I have since tracked these guys down, become friends with them, talk to them regularly over the last 8 years. Not only because I'm a little weird and slightly stalkerish, but also because they literally, the message saved my life. You know, my parents are grateful for these men that they've never met, but they know about those guys, you know, because they didn't have to bury their youngest son when some of their friends have. Because they've seen their son finally become the man he always wanted to be. Something of a semblance of what how his father treated his mother. Finally, years in, their son has started to grow into someone, you know, and something that is not just a self-serving, ego-driven proposition of ridiculousness. And they know, that had I just been able to do that, I'd have done it a long time ago. So, like any good alcoholic, of course, I'm not just going to like have that one message and then like, now let's do all the steps and actually live honestly. What I need to do for a while is start yelling about what I just learned, because it's pretty cool to like now have something to yell about. You know what I mean? So suppose like I'm the guy that for the next 5 years, for the sake of time, goes through the steps 4 different times and jumps over 8 and 9 each time. I tap 10 on his cute little head. I roll around in 11 for about 6 minutes a day. And then I just start trying to talk to people about stuff and sponsor people, because I'm insane and I don't want the outside really areas of my life to change. I don't want to have different conduct with women. I don't want to have different conduct with money. I don't really want to consummate the third step decision. I really don't. That's the truth. And I really wasn't willing to. That was shown by the amount of amends that I made. It was very clear this man is not actually willing to turn his entire woman's life. It was glaringly clear, again, for me, in the rearview mirror. At the time, I just thought, like, this is my current experience. And the first step, come on, let's make an inventory. And which is, like, you know, I didn't drink, you know, I'm still connected to some people from then. I have had to make amends to a lot more people from then than I am still connected to, though. That's the reality about my life. You know, I get a call at 3 years sober and the call goes like this. Hey, Jack, do you want to move to Los Angeles and help people and get paid to do so? And I said, hey, God, I don't know why it took you 3 years to call, but thanks, man. And I told the person on the other phone, absolutely. Of course I do. Wow, this is clearly my calling. It's exactly what he's at. Then I was like, hold on, man. I got to pray. I got to ask my sponsor about this, you know. But I'm the guy that, like, I'm so far gone at this. I haven't been sponsored really in years. And it is definitely important to sponsor people. I am fortunate that I get to work with alcoholics. But it feels like as time goes on here, this principle of being sponsorable and being sponsored is growing as equally as important for me. Because I know the direction that the man that sponsored me right now would have given me, at least to an extent. And I guarantee you, had I taken it, the next few years would have looked really different. Now, we're glad they didn't, because I met my wife out there and I had a really powerful experience. I also ended up, you know, catching some serious charges and burning my life to the ground. So 7:37. All right. So I go to Los Angeles, talk to my sponsor. I convince him, my whole family, my boss, everybody around me, this is the best thing that's ever going to happen. Not only did I get their blessing, I got my boss to give me a big loan to, like, go out there. I'm that guy, man. I just, like, again, don't tell me fake it till you make it. This is what I'm shooting for. I got everybody, because I need you all to be on my side. I can't go out there feeling like I'm doing something, like I'm going to be leaving on a bad chance. And I couldn't see it. It's all so dishonest and so self-seeking from the get-go, you know? And shocker, spoiler alert, right? It didn't end well. I know you guys were all like, how? Oh my God, Jack, no way. You know, like, yes, it ended terribly. With a lot more dishonesty and levels of selfishness that I really didn't know I was capable of sober. I didn't know because I hadn't experienced it yet. But I began to learn. I go west. My life, the first few months, I was there 4 years. The first few months, there was some honesty in the motives, quickly transcended by the dollar was God, period. You know, I worked for the dollar. I worked for money. I worked for validation. I didn't work for God. I worked for relief. I heard a speaker one time say that he was like a relief-seeking missile once the alcohol was taken out of him, that wherever there was relief, boom, there he went. And this also is my reality. Right? This will happen again if I don't remain willing to follow a few simple rules, if you want to call it, to practices designed for living, to say however you want to say it, stay on the beat. This is where I will end up if I don't stay with you guys, stay both in the hands of a sponsor and men to work with, active in my home group, having a disciplined life in 10 and 11, being willing to be shown when I'm wrong. And that thing that I read about, like, how much are you willing to just say, oh, I don't know. How much you want to unfamiliar? The direct proportion. This is what happens to me at 6 years sober. Eventually, when I fall in love with a girl, I can't stay with her. I leave her 3 times in 18 months. Every about 4 to 6 months, I'm like, honey, I'm sorry, but I got to think about some stuff. Which means, an alcoholic, I want to do whatever I want to do, or I'm scared, or I have some weird self-seeking motive to where I want to step. It's a lie. I was just lying. But the last time that I left, she got with her sponsor. She did some step work. She got closer to God for the 5 weeks while I was not called. And when I came back, I was on the phone with a slightly different individual. And I can tell you, the first time I knew that was when I said, hey, can we chat? And she said, you can call me at 6 p.m. if you like. Okay, I guess I'll call you at 6 then. Like, there's always just like, yeah, sure. Like, you know what I mean? Just like right away. But no, there was like, I could tell immediately that something was different. And they get on the phone, and eventually at some point in this conversation, I start talking about how I don't know what's going on. I start talking about how I don't want to keep doing what I'm doing, leaving her and coming back, like, but I don't know what's happening. And fortunately, she had gotten a lot of advice from some well-meaning people that told her stuff like, you can't tell Jack the truth about his life. You can't do this. You know how our book talks about not being arbitrable. We used to love arbitrating. We just won't get up in there. And, you know what I mean? So she had, unfortunately, she listened to them and smiled at them, but went to God. Because what happens is in this phone call, she would tell this story, at least a little bit. She would tell this story like this. That she was on the other end of this phone, and I start saying that I don't know what's going on. And she is terrified that she's about to tell me the type of man she can't be with, and about to tell me the type of man I've become, and that I am never going to speak to her again. But in her heart of hearts, she knows that we're supposed to be married. And she was terrified. And what did she do? I'll give you guys one guess, because we're on our honeymoon right now. You guessed it. She told me the truth in a loving tone. Wait, but she started explaining the type of things that I was doing, that she could never be with someone that lived like that. The layers and levels of dishonesty, layers and levels of just this work life and this driven by all these false gods, just this. She said something to the effect of, I was so blocked from my own heart that even the people that loved me the most and whom I loved the most couldn't tell anymore really what or who I was. I've never even had anybody say something like that to me. It was just so honest. She thought I was never going to talk to her again. The last thing in the world, as she would say, that she thought was going to happen, was that as a result of this conversation, somehow God's power was going to flow through these words. I was going to become willing to look at the entirety of my life. I was going to re-engage in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to get on a plane a couple weeks later with a written inventory and go see a man that's tried to sponsor me years prior. I was going to walk into a conference with him, go into a hotel room with a written inventory, do a fifth step, come out of there, take time, into six, say the seven-step prayer, write an eight-step list, and start making direct events at the end of that weekend. That is the last thing on the list of things that Cleo thought was going to happen, and that is my story. That is what God did for me as a result of someone else's love. Because God's not partying with the qualified. He's rocking with the willing. That's what he's doing. And this is what happened. Like, she was willing in that moment to deliver a layer of truth that very well may have saved my life, but ruined her plans for where and what she thought we were supposed to be. And God was ready for somebody that way. I was dying and didn't know it. I knew it, but I didn't know it. I ended up back in touch with the man that's sponsoring me now. He asked me one simple question. You know, he hit me with the, I called him to like tell him about this experience, what she told me, and then I like saw the truth of my life. Because I woke up the next morning and it felt like I had like movie screens in front of me. And it was all these different layers and levels of my life that I knew I was going to have to walk away from. I just didn't know how. I was living with people that I was working. I had groomed 5-10 different people, you know, to work for me and be a part of basically this scam, this insurance fraud scam. Like I had surrounded myself with dishonesty to an extent that was sad and terrifying. But I knew I had to walk away from it. I had no idea. So I call him to tell him about this, and he says, hey, Jack, have you thought about writing an inventory about the last few years? I was just like, no, Mr. Genius sponsor man. I can't say that I have. But it's really good to be back in touch with you, Dane. And I guess I'll hop on that. And I did. And like I said, I flew to New Jersey and I met him at the Jersey Shore Roundup, and we got there a day or two early. And it's a cool thing for me to think about walking into that hotel room, going into that fifth step. Because as I sit here now, a couple of years later, I know that fundamentally I am a different man than the man that walked into that room. And I don't know that I really believed that that's what was going to happen when I went. I knew I needed a lot of help. But I didn't actually believe that God could start to systematically transform each area of my life. That's exactly what has happened. And for me, I experience strength that began to really come was finally putting all the names down, capital A-L-L, and finally becoming willing to make amends to capital A-L-L, all of them. And then going out, demonstrating that willingness by actually doing it. Spending most dollars that were made over those years just traveling the country, telling people exactly how atrocious my conduct had been with them, from California to Florida to Texas to Denver to Maine to Massachusetts to wherever we had to go. And there was one amends that sat on the list, right? And it literally was just like, my work life, pretty much in its entirety. You know, I was pretty much involved in, you know, insurance fraud. The only reason I say pretty much is because I have alcoholism. I was involved in insurance fraud. It's just, this is always a little twitch in there, you know what I mean? The federal government, there's no like, it's like pregnancy, right? It's like, you either are or you aren't. Federal government doesn't, there's no like pretty much like kind of sort of guilty with an explanation type of deal. So anyway, the bottom of the list though, like my work life is written, but there's other men that will be implicated. I have a partner now that I'm actually trying to be like a demonstrating principle living man with. So I'm talking to Dane, I'm talking to my sponsor about like, how do I make this amends? And he's like, well, we're not just running down somewhere and throwing ourselves on the sword as a martyr. And what exactly would you say anyway? And could you do it without implicating these people that clearly don't want to give you their consent? And I was just like, definitely not. That would be impossible, you know? So I was like, all right, we have about 147 or 190 other amends that we can start making, you know? So let's start there. And as we go, we'll see what God does about bringing some clarity around this. And thank God for his direction. Because about halfway through that list, on a trip from California to the East Coast, the FBI showed up at my parents' house and they had an arrest warrant. Said the United States of America versus John C. Dillon. And it became very clear in that moment, June 25th, 2019, exactly how we were going to begin to make that amends. It was a very bizarre day. It was a very bizarre experience. It was terrifying and beautiful and grace-filled and power-filled and faith-building. It was a bizarre thing. I wish it hadn't happened in front of my father, but I don't get to control and manage that. And I was just kind of sad that he had to see something like that again in his life. But the cool thing was that finally being sponsored and taking direction based out of the big book, and going and making amends and being just brutally honest and having a format and going in prayer, that my parents were clear about my work life 1,000%. And they were also clear that for me to live and be free and be a useful member of society, some way, someday, somehow, somewhere, I was going to have to clean my work life up. I just didn't know how. And so when I stood in front of him that day with these five officers in his living room, and my dad looked at me and he said, Jack, I'm just sorry. You got to do this right now. I was able to look at him and my wife now, who's there at the time, just say, clearly, Dad, this is exactly what needs to happen. This is what I must do. I'm just sorry it had to happen here. Then I got put in the back of some unmarked car, taking some undisclosed location, asked a bunch of questions I didn't know how to answer, and didn't, and ended up at the federal courthouse in Baltimore, Maryland, 6 years sober, 7 years sober, trying to figure out what is going on. Like, all I can say is just like, God, show me what to do. God, show me what to do. God, show me what to do. This prayer is just constantly rolling. There's other guys in there for doing felony favors with cocaine and stuff in this cell. I'm just like trying to talk to them and be helpful to them in any way. Like, I'm just trying to not think about myself, because I'm just like, God, what are you about to do? Like, what's going on, man? Like, am I going to prison for real? Like, am I really about to get locked up? Or like, am I getting back out? Or like, what are we doing, dude? Like, am I supposed to 12 set this guy across from me that's in here for, that's about to get like 10 years minimum for the blow truck? Like, what's going on? Because I know you're not trying to just like punish. The experience that I've had is too rich for that. It's too deep. At that point, there had already been too much. I had seen too many people. I'd watched families reassemble. I'd seen people that thought I would never talk to them again, give them the opportunity to tell me whatever they wanted to about what they had done to me. I watched the 9-step process free other human beings in front of me by being willing to fly wherever I needed to go and go see them wherever they wanted to see me and give them the dignity and the time to tell me whatever they needed. I knew I was there for a reason. I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt, just didn't know what it was. All of a sudden, I'm sitting there and they call my name and I'm like going to meet with a public defender. They're like, they're doing an arraignment, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I watched a lot of Law and Order, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, all right, cool, arraignment. Yeah, I know that's a good thing for the situation that I'm in. But I also know that, like, it could end poorly. I'm pretty sure that's like a case type deal with two sides. And how do y'all even know me? Like, what? You know, like, so anyway, I go into this little room. I swear it's like 5 feet by 5 feet cement with a metal bench and this little slab of metal like this big. You can like just barely write some more, you know. And I told you about my experience to the steps so far today. And at this point, like, I knew that like the first 4 or 5 times there was a lot that I didn't do, you know. My sponsor was very clear about the fact that like there's nothing outside of the word all. Everything, God, everything is or isn't. And I'm sitting in this little room and I'm getting ready to meet with whoever this person is, and totally alone, just continuing to pray. I look down at this little slab of metal that I'm getting ready to sign my life away on. God only knows what's about to happen. And all I see carved in this little slab of metal is 3 letters. That's it. A-L-L. Nothing else. And I was just like, what? Are you kidding me? I paused and I went somewhere and I was just like, God, are you telling me that you brought me all the way here to show me that you care that much about these debts getting repaid and one of your kids getting free and other men getting helped? You care that you even showed me that here now? And I burst out into hysterical laughter. I very quickly caught myself because I didn't want them to put me in some sort of insane asylum, because I remembered very quickly that I was in a federal courthouse with lots of people that have a lot of power walking around. So I stopped myself. But like, I literally was blasted. And like, this is, I mean, I'm not saying like I haven't been, we were on a trip from California. I've lived in Baltimore, Maryland ever since. Right? That's where I'm from. I June 25th, 2019, my wife and I were moved to Maryland as a result of that. I have not been back to California yet. My wife had to go to California and move all of our stuff. She's a champion and a hero. She's an incredible human being. And all of a sudden, here we are in Maryland, and I got out that day, and get, you know, whatever, pretrial release. And they're like, you got to do your analysis. You got to do this. I'm like, that's great. Can I leave my number as I do your analysis just in case there's anybody there that actually wants to get sober? Because I'd really love to get them involved with some of the people that I know. And they're looking at me like, what? I'm like, yeah, just like, I've been sober. I know, like, I'm not the best example right now, like, being sober, but I've been sober for a while, and I know that, like, you know, part of why I'm here is because I clean it up. I like to, like, you know, like, I just meet, like, we hit the ground running in Baltimore. Like I told you, I'm a part of this home with the firing, you know, and this is where we stay. The line on page 102 says that we keep on the firing line of life, you know, with the motives of being useful, and God will keep you unharmed. This is a promise. God will take you to a federal courthouse with the United States versus you and put you in a 5x5 piece of cement and show you the three letters that your sponsor made clear as you went through the steps this time. This is the type of, like, I had no idea that something was real. And all of a sudden, my aunt's having more and more trouble in Baltimore. My parents are getting old. COVID happens. A home group is born. 5, 10, 15 men through the steps. All of a sudden, they're helping other people. All of a sudden, it becomes so clear why I got moved back to the place where I still had the most unmade amends, right? All of a sudden, it becomes clear why I got moved without my permission back to be a member of my family. All of a sudden, it becomes clear what it's actually like to really have a new employer. What is it like to work for God? Sometimes it feels like sitting in a federal courthouse. Sometimes it feels like sitting on the other side of a fiesta. Sometimes it feels like sitting where I am right now on my honeymoon in Rincon, Puerto Rico. Sometimes it feels like all these things, but it's not my plan. It is not my life. It's not my deal. It's not about just me and my life. It's about every one of you. It's about carrying this message. It's about telling the truth. It's about remaining willing to be shown what our true purpose, our true job is, which is to work for an infinite power. What greater job is there? Man, what a deal. What a gift. What a miracle of a story. I'm a guy that three times, I had to get the message brought and delivered right to my face. I have friends that are buried in the ground right now that never got to a meeting ever, not even once. I don't know why that is. I assume it's because there's more work to be done for me, for him. That's about as far as I can get. I have no idea. I know it's because I'm no better than this. That's for sure. But I do know that there's a lot of grace and a lot of power available here. If there's all these ifs, and a lot of the readings that you hear in meetings, you know, God couldn't, would, if. That's a big if, man. These promises will materialize if. That's a big if, man. You know, I'm the guy, I think this stuff's coming to me. If is contingent upon action. And I never got free. I never got this passionate from a place of honesty, where I'm actually sweating because of how much I love the people in this room that I've never even met. That I want to have the conversation with my wife about taking some time out of our honeymoon to be able to do this. Not just saying, hey, this is what we're doing. Finally been able to be that man. I got to marry that girl in the middle of a pandemic in her grandmother's parking lot because she was 97 and COVID had just happened. And instead of postponing a big ceremony for us, we wanted to go demonstrate love to a woman that might not be here next year. This is what God has done for my wife's grandmother. The ripple effect that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is immeasurable because it is an infinite power that is doing the rippling. So let's stay willing. Let's stay on the fire line. Let's continue to take simple actions together. Let's walk with a common solution. Let's have a common message. Let's talk about the truth. Let's be willing to be shown. And let's do it together. Please, because I need you. And I'm grateful that I was able to come here and share any of this with you guys and just tell the truth and be with you for an hour. Thank you for my life. Thank God for the people that came before us. Thank God for the willingness to put it in a book. Thank God for God. Thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you, Jack. I'm going to allow everybody to unmute momentarily and thank Jack. That was amazing.
Thank you, Jack. That was incredible, man.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jack.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and take it back again. Thank you so much, Jack. That was amazing. I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. Hey, see how that lined up? Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will be happy to take a few announcements. Anybody? All righty then. Seeing none, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Thank everybody for coming out tonight, for making this a wonderful experience. Thank you again, Jack. Everybody will get the opportunity to thank him again after the Lord's Prayer. And if I could ask our dear Morgan to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please.
Alrighty. I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Mo. All right. Let's circle up virtually and feel free to unmute. And we can have a confusing, static-filled, feedback-ridden Jimi Hendrix version of the Lord's Prayer. Moment of silence. Whose Father?
Our Father.
Father.
Who art in heaven.
Hallowed
be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Jack. Congratulations.
Thank you, brother. Thanks, Jack. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. That was
thank you, Morgan. Too, good Jack. To see you, bro.
It's good to see you, too. Come a long way since those manhouse noon meetings.
Life is very different, my man.
Me, too. It's good to be on this side.
Thank God.
Yeah, for real.